Okay, so we're having Chibur today on the Ketoret of Yom Kippurim, as well as on some of the differences between the Ketoret of Yom Kippurim and the Ketoret of Kol Hashanah. It's a bold and ambitious topic, seemingly because the Ketoret on Yom Kippur is a highlight of the Yom Kippur Avodah. Right? You start at the very beginning of our parsha, Acharemos, Meir Hashem al Moshe, Acharemos, Shnei B'nei Aaron, B'kor Basam L'fnei Hashem V'yamusu. So we're introducing the Avodah of the Avodah Yom Kippurim, immediately after Mot Shnei B'nei Aaron, and while the Mot Shnei B'nei Aaron is one of those cases where we don't really know what they did wrong, but it seems to have something to do with an Esh Zara that they brought into some part of the Mishkan that they weren't supposed to. So the details being as opaque as they are, we know there's something about bringing some kind of Esh or some kind of Ketores in that seems to be the cause of it, and then the Avodah Yom Kippurim is in part framed as a response to that. And immediately in the next pasuk as well, "Vayomer Hashem Moshe daber al Aaron achicha v'al yevo b'chol eid al kodesh mibet laparochet." Don't do what the Bnei Aaron did. Don't go whenever you want. Asher al Aaron v'lo yamut ki be'anan erei lakaporet. And we'll see that the anan, Rashi's second interpretation of the anan is, you will need to come in with the anan haktoret al yevo ki im be'anan haktoret b'yom kippurim. That is when you're meant to come into the kodesh. And so it seems to be part of the framing narrative of the Avodah Yom Kippurim is the ketoret. So definitely a ambitious topic to try to cover. What we're going to try doing today is noting some of the details of the Avodah Yom Kippurim, or the Ketoret of Yom Kippurim, that make it unique as compared to the Ketoret of Kol Hashanah. And then we'll try to suggest some ways of thinking about the role of the Ketoret on Yom Kippurim and what the focus of that Avodah is. Okay, so to start off, we'll look at the psukim as they appear both in Shmos and in Acharemos. In Shmos, we meet really not even the Ketores first, but the Mizbeach HaZahav on which the Ketores is offered. And that section describes it as follows. You start by setting up the Mizbeach HaKetoret at the beginning of Parak Lamed. V'hikter lav aron ketoret samim baboker baboker. You'll offer a Ketores on it every day. Note that verb v'hikter, that will be important soon. Juxtaposed to the Neirot Beitivo at Haneirot Yakirena, and then again in the evening, Valot Aron at Neirot Bein Harbayim Yakirena, Ketoret Tamim Lefnei Hashem L'Dorotichem. Don't bring other things on this Mizbeach. This is a unique Mizbeach that really does not have offerings put on it. You don't put on a Ketoret Zara, or an Ola, or a Mincha, or an Esach, or any other kind of Korban, specifically the Ketores. And then this last Pasuk is very interesting as well. V'chiper Aron al Karnotav Achar Bashana. Now, for some reason, the Mizbeach HaKetoret is framed as an Achad Bashana kind of institution. Obviously, it's used baboker every single day, but also its annual role is being emphasized here in a way that, for example, the annual role of, we learned about the Paruchas recently, is not emphasized when the Paruchas is introduced in Truma. It comes up again when we get to Acharemos, but here the annual role that the Mizbeach HaZahav has is being played up here. Achad Bashana, Midam Chadar Kippur, Achad Bashana, twice in that pasuk, Yichaper Alav L'Dorotichem. So, on the one hand, we have this sense that there's a daily responsibility of Ketores is being offered on the Mizbeach HaZahav, Yakti Rena. And at the same time, there's a relationship to Yom Kippur already being foreshadowed here, even if the details aren't being presented directly. If you jump forward now to Perak Tet Zayin, Vayikra, Acharemos, we see the Torah as it's presented here. And we'll note a couple of key differences even in the presentation in the Pesukim. Starting from Pasuk Yudbet, we've just done the Vidui on the Par, V'chiper Bado Vad Beto, V'shachad Parachatad Shelo. And then we start talking about the Ketores. V'lakach Molo Amach Tagach Le'esh Me'alam Mizbeach Me'lefnei Hashem. You'll take the pan of coals, V'molo Chafen of Ketoret Samim Daka, and the well-ground Ketores, double ground, as we'll see. V'hivim Mibela Paruchet, and you'll bring it inside of the Paruchet. V'natan Et HaKetoret Al Ha'esh. So you put the Ketoret on the fire. You're not Machter the Ketoret on the fire. You just put it there. Interesting that we're downplaying Haktara here in this presentation. But we're playing up as another verb, V'chisa Anan HaKetoret Al HaKaporet. Rather, the cloud will come up from the Ketoret, and it covers the Kaporet, and you won't die, which would have been the consequence if something had gone wrong, for reasons that the Stukim and the Prusha might argue about a little bit later in this Chabura. So just from the Pesukim, we see a couple of key differences. The difference in the verb, what is the action specifically that you're doing, Haktara or just Netina. The location, obviously, is an important difference as well. It's not on the Mizbeach HaZahav, it's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And a third difference is this emphasis on the cloud, which actually doesn't appear anywhere in Sefer Shmos in the context of the Torah. You look at the Torah in Shmos, you know the ingredients from the end of Perek Lamed there, but we don't get the sense that the Torah is about bringing up a cloud per se. Maybe it's meant to smell nice, there's kinamon, it's a very nice smelling herb. I'm sure some of the other herbs would also be very pleasant. I think we know what most of them are. Do we know if we know them? They're all translated in your English Chumashim. I hope we know the identifications of those. Oh, we don't know the Malasha. That's controversial, and that will get us to one of our later points. Okay, so just about in the Pesukim already, we see certain kinds of differences being played up. We're not going to directly deal with, because it would be more than the one Chabura that already is too small for the topic that we're dealing with. But just thinking about the Ketores itself and what the role of the Ketores on an everyday basis is. So you can't not talk about it at all, but we also can't do it as fully as we'd like here. But one of the major questions we have to think about when thinking about the Ketores b'chol yom v'yom is whether it really has the din of a korban or not. So just to pick one or two examples where this comes up, the Gemara Menachos and of Chaf Aleph has a debate about whether you're going to put melach in the Ketores. Seems that you would say that you put melach in the Ketores if it's a korban. Every korban has to have a din of melach. However, if it's serving some other kind of function, then maybe the melach would be a little bit less important. And we'll come back to that in the context of Yom Kippur as well in a little bit. Looking at the Tamei HaMitzvot Sfarim, so, you know, Rambam thinks that the Ketores is basically a deodorant. Sefer HaChinuch presents it as part of, like, the kavod of the bayit. But even there, it's not being presented as an offering, the same way he describes the purpose of korbanot, zvachim, and menachot. I guess a very different emphasis in the Sefer HaMitzvot there as well. The Griz and the Grach, we saw that, I think, in one of the Torah Beitz Brisk sections. One of the downsides of quoting a bunch of them is that it is a little hard to pick out where each piece comes from. I think this was in Tamidim U'Musafim, if I'm not mistaken, in the Igros Sigrid, quoting the Griz and Rav Chaim, but I'll double-check that if we need. Makes the claim that we've talked about already earlier this year, that we should not think of the Ketores even during the rest of the year as a korban. Really, it is a maisa haktara that we do, but without the kapara or ritsui that might come from that. And he derives that from I guess you might call it a stira in the Sefer HaMitzvos of the Rambam, whereby, let's say, talking about the Tamidim, he says the goal of the Tamidim, or the mitzvah of Tamidim, is that Bnei Yisrael should bring it, and Kohanim are there as shluchim of Bnei Yisrael, but primarily it serves Bnei Yisrael in some way, whereas the Kohanim, by the Ketores, are defined as the ones who bring the Ketores, and there's not a reference to Bnei Yisrael. So the Griz explains that it's because the Ketores every day, is just a haktara. The Kohanim need to do it every day, but it's not something that Bnei Yisrael are getting any sense of kapara from. We'll just circle back to the kapara piece, because there's a Gemara in Yom HaMemdala that maybe complicates that a little bit. I saw the Rav quoted, they said it was in the Shiurei Grid in Krisus. I didn't get a chance to look it up. But the Rav was apparently quoted saying there are actually two dinim in the Torah. So there's one din that's a korban with ritzui and all of the normal aspects of korbanos, and one that is a maisa haktara ba'alma, and he ground that in two different parshios in the end of Sefer Shmos, where the two different references to the Torah appear. But I didn't get a chance to look at it inside. I'll flag it, and people can come back to it. Okay. We'll now move to some of the differences between the Ketores every year and the Ketores on Yom Kippur. We could, broadly speaking, group these into three different categories of differences that we find. We have some differences in the location where it's offered, the setting of the offering of the Ketores, some differences in how it is prepared and offered, and then some differences in actually what the Ketores itself is. Is it really the same substance, both on Yom Kippur and during the rest of the year? And some of these might be subject to machloket, whether in the Rishonim or in some of the Achronim. So we'll start with the Makom Haktara. I mean, the first obvious example we already mentioned comes from the Psukim. The one, the Ketores of every day is offered on the Mizbeach Hazav, whereas the Ketores on Yom Kippur is offered Bein Habadim in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. I didn't put the Gevurah Sari on the Makoros, but anyone saw the Gevurah Sari on Daf Nun Bet, notes that the Gevurah Sari in Daf Nun Bet notes that, or argues that really the Bein Habadim is Lav Dafka, and really anywhere in the Kodesh HaKadoshim would be fine to offer it. But the Griz and others draw from the Pasuk V'natana Rishos Al Eish Lifnei Hashem, putting it before Hashem, as a makor for putting it specifically Bein Habadim. And obviously, a location of Bein Habadim suggests a certain kind of a relationship to the Aron, or a relationship to the Shechina, which we'll discuss a little bit later. And the second issue comes up is the issue of the Machta, and specifically the status of the Machta of the Ktores. So this actually is an interesting machlokas rishonim. So what the role of the machta is. We already saw in the context of forgetting the name of the avoda at the moment. I'm scooping the coals. Thank you. A discussion about whether the machta is a kli shares or not. That itself would be an interesting data point for thinking about the role of the machta. But there's a Gemara Menachos who's also Daf Tzadi Tet that calls the machto not of the Kohen on Yom Kippur, but the machto of the Nesiim that they would use to bring their Ketores during the Shiva Simehem Yiluim, Tashmishe Mizbeach. It's notable also that the machtot of Korach, who also brought a Ketoret on a machtot, were then turned into a covering for the Mizbeach. So it might be that the machta is something that we should see as almost a portable Mizbeach. It's, we take coals from one Mizbeach, we keep the Mizbeach energy going in this pan, this gold pan on Yom Kippur, and use it as a way of carrying the Mizbeach into a place where there generally is no Mizbeach. And basically it's a portable Mizbeach, and in that way, if we take the machta as a kind of portable Mizbeach, we might understand that the Ketores on Yom Kippur is offered, at least, in the same kind of location as the offering during the rest of the year. There's a great line in the Ritva, though, on Daf Mem Zayin, who argues a little bit differently. He says, Halcha, in the context of the Vodav Yom Kippur, Delekem is Beach, Lohava Na'a Lahakir Bakarka. It wouldn't have been so nice to put the coals on the ground and just burn it over there. Lefiha Haya Machter Alamachta, therefore it was nice to put on a Machta, and he draws precedent from Nadav and Avihu, who also took Machtot of Ketoret. It's a kind of funny Havamina that you would think, I'll just throw the coals on the floor and then sprinkle some spices over them, and that would be the way to do the avoda. Both because viscerally it's not very nah, but also it's weird to think of avoda kind of being done willy-nilly, like wherever you happen to drop your coals, you happen to offer your ketores there. You might argue for the ritva that the connection to the mizbeach is being lost when you go into the Kodesh HaKadashim. Really, we're not offering ketores on a mizbeach at all. We're burning them, and we need a source of heat to burn them, so we have to bring in coals with us as well. But really, we're sacrificing a connection to the mizbeach and to the normal set of avodot and set of korbanot, and moving on to do something a little bit different. Potentially another nafkamina of this discussion would be whether other dinim of mizbeach upon a machtot, or other dinim of haktara on a mizbeach upon a machtot, to machtot. Just to note one example of that, so there's a machloket achronim about whether the lav of offering seor and dvash on a mizbeach applies to a machta. There's also a discussion about if it applies to the mizbeach azad as well, but if you bring the machta into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and you, I imagine you do it with the Ketores, but maybe before the Ketores, or after the Ketores would count as well. I'm not fresh on those details.
Mizbeach question or like a Ketores question?
So in this context, I think it's a Mizbeach question, meaning the discussion there, at least in the Grizz and the Kuntres HaMoedot, is especially grounded in the definition of the machta as a makom haktara, they call it. Not as a Mizbeach, but as a makom haktara. So for the Grizz, it's not even though it's a makom haktara for this ketores locally, it's not been generalized as a makom haktara, and therefore the law of offering sor and dvash, in whatever form that would be, would not apply. The Minchas Chinuch is brought down as saying that it would. So maybe those line up with those shittim in the Rishonim as well. Is the machta really a makom haktara or a mizbeach in the more classical sense? Okay, moving on to the second kind of difference about the form in which the ketores is offered. So we saw a debate on Daf Mem Tet, and then there seemed to be a hachra already on Daf Nun Bet as well, about whether you would pile up the ketoret into a big mound, tzovra, or you would spread it out in the fazra across the face of the coals. And our mission on Daf Nun Bet poskins that you pile it up. It doesn't present it as a debate, it says tzavar. It uses that verb to describe how it was presented. There's potential stira. Not everyone thinks this is a stira. Between this Mishnah and the Mishnah in Tamid, in Perek Vav Halacha Gimel, I'm not opening it now, I'm just opening the Gemara for future reference, where the Mishnah there seems to say that you are meradeid something. It doesn't say exactly what you're meradeid, but it seems to have this connotation of spreading things out. So some of the Mefarshei Mishnah think that means you're spreading out the coals across the Mizbeach Hazah for the offering of the daily Ketoret, but others assume that it means you're spreading out the daily Ketoret on top of the coals. The sequence of the Mishnah is a little bit funny because it seems to describe offering the Ketoret and leaving twice, and so you might argue that those are, you know, one person setting up the coals and the second one's really referring to the offering of the Ketores, or maybe you're kind of circling back and adding more detail the second time around. It's a little bit unclear in that Mishnah. So some of the Mefarshim in the Mishnah, like Rav Avadi Bar Tanura, for example, So Bartanura explains that really you pile it up. And actually the machloket and daf memtet was about both the ketores of every day and the ketores of Yom Kippur. And when our Gemara, or our Mishnah, and daf nun bet paskins that we pile it up, that also applies to the daily ketores as well. And then you have to explain the Mishnah slightly differently. Maybe you spread out the coals evenly, talking about spreading out the coals. Maybe you pile it up first and then you spread it out. That would itself be an interesting interpretation. The different interpretations offered in the Mefarshim there. But the Rambam, in Avodah Yom Kippurim and in Tuminim Musafim, seem to paskin respectively that you pile it up on Yom Kippur, but you spread it out over Shraya Mosh Hashanah. And so you have to ask what the difference is between these two things. You have a couple different themes that get emphasized by different Mefarshim. The Meiri comes down and says it's very practical. It's primarily a technical din in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which is a more confined space. You're offering ketores and you're standing there while the ketores billows up. So if you were to spread it out too quickly, so the ketores would burn very quickly, smoke would be produced very quickly, and it would be a choking hazard. It would be very dangerous. On the flip side, he argues that the value added for being faster would be that you're going to minimize seeing the Shechina or minimize being Nana from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. That's the emphasis of the Meiri. Other Rishonim argue that it's about being Nana from the Shechina. Either way, you get the sense that it's primarily a practical question about balancing the practical value of getting the smoke quickly but not going too fast, that it becomes dangerous to your health. In the Tamar HaRashba Seder HaAvodah, this was great. It's my first Seder HaAvodah that's not a poem, so it's actually clear what they mean, as opposed to trying to infer from, I don't know if you meant this, literally, or if you're trying to alliterate, so it's very hard to tell in some of the poetic Seder HaAvodah. I mentioned one maybe towards the end. But Talmud Rashi was very explicit. He notes this issue in the Rambam. And he says that on Yom Kippur, there's a difference from the rest of the year, and that there's the din of kiba anan era'a la kaporet. You have to have a cloud be formed. So normally, and his argument seems to be that that if you were to burn it very quickly, you would actually not be able to form a cloud. Again, part of this is a physics question, and if we were doing this with the high schoolers here, we'd probably set up a lab and test all of these theories out. Also, we need to know what Malashan is, and that makes it very difficult to do those experiments. In any case, so for the Talmud Rashba, we have this idea of creating a cloud, and that being the theme and the importance of the Avodah Yom Kippur, whereas during the rest of the year, there's no such value, and so instead we maybe prioritize efficiency, or just a different kind of burning mechanism. There's this similar kind of argument from the Siach Yitzchak, which is a really nice piece. I think Noach flagged it for us in the beginning of the week. He argues that on Yom Kippur, the goal is to slow down the production of the smoke, either in order to avoid the appearance of like rushing out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You shouldn't be, let me just quickly burn it up, get all the smoke done and head out. I'd rather the smoke take a long time to fill up the house. They're actually slowing the burning process by piling it up. Or, related to the Talmud Rashba, you want to produce enough smoke in order to actually make a very nice cloud that serves as a cover. The goal is vechisa. You have to make not just smoke, but also a particular kind of smoke that has a particular way of maneuvering around the Kodesh HaKadoshim. During the year, however, you actually want to minimize the smoke. And he quotes the rush to that effect. The goal during the year that we go fast specifically so that there should not be smoke. So if you want to talk about the fact that the Anan is highlighted on Yom Kippur and downplayed everywhere else, certainly that would be a great makor to look at.
Why not minimize?
He didn't say, which is a fair question to ask, why do you want to minimize the smoke? Certainly the smoke serves no affirmative value in that model, right? We're trying to undercut it as much as possible. So maybe it ends up playing other aspects of it. Could be for the same reason that Miri mentions, a safety concern or a kavod kind of concern, that really the smoke doesn't add much. You could also imagine it darkening the walls of the Kodesh. That wouldn't be very pleasant. I can imagine a number of practical dinim to that effect. Specifically, not only to burn quicker, but also to minimize the smoke. Okay, so those are differences regarding the makom of the offering or the burning of the ketores and the way it was being burnt. Now on to the chefza of the ketoret itself. What is this mixture? Is it the same mixture during the year? Is it a different mixture in some way? It's already worth noting that we actually take the ketores from the rest of the year. We make a big batch of 368 mana and then take some of it for Yom Kippur. So already that suggests on the one hand a connection to the original. And the question is, how transformative are the changes? Are we creating a new kind of ketores? Or is it basically the same thing that we had done during the rest of the year. And it would lead to interesting questions about, for example, taking that Ketores and offering it anywhere b'chutz, which we saw was certainly a problem that the Rambam was sensitive to and others were sensitive to as well. And so I'll mention three examples in kind of increasing order in size and increasing order of what I gave you a chance to look at in advance. So the first question is salt. We already talked about salt in the context of the Ketores every day. There's a similar machloket achronim about whether the salt would be included in the Ketores for Yom Kippur, having salt in all your carbonos, meaning, I don't know if melech sedomis here is a complicating factor. I didn't get a chance to track that detail down. But the achronim seem to talk about it as though the melech sedomis is not necessarily fulfilling this din. And there you have a machloket in the Mikdash Shtavid and the Menachim Nach about whether you're going to require salt, and it seems to line up with Shisasam also from earlier about whether the machs is considered a makam haktara or not. So if it's a makam haktara, you'd want to include salt because you're being makt or something. If it's not a makam haktara, so maybe the same way there's no issue of putting salt or dvash, there also might be no chiyuv to put salt. That's an interesting question that comes up as well in the Achronim. The second issue we mentioned is the issue of daka versus daka min hadaka. The Bryce and Krisos describes how you take from the Ketores and you chop it up again. It says Ketores semim daka in Achrimos after having already said daka in the definition of the Ketores. So Haraya needs to be double daka. This is where the briskers bite into this. The Grizz argues that this isn't actually changing the chafs of the Ketores. Same Ketores, there's just an extra chiyuv of doing another maisa shchika. Ad kidei kach, that he thinks that perhaps this second grinding of the Ketores that you do doesn't need to be done in the Kodesh at all. It could be done in the Chol, because it's not really it's not about preparing the Ketores, which has to generally be done in the Kodesh. It's just an extra chiyuv that may come out of that. But the Rav in the Shiurim in Krisos comes to the opposite conclusion. He argues it is part of the Chafta of the Ketores, and he infers this mostly from the fact that the Rambam in Klei HaMikdash, in describing the preparation of the Ketores, includes this detail as part of what the Ketores is, and not as this additional thing that we do as part of the Avodah Yom Kippurim, let's say. There's a discussion there, so that might relate to the Chafta, might go back to the discussion of the preparation of the Ketores that we mentioned earlier. The third is the question of the Malashan, and that's the one that we got a chance to really bite our teeth into much more deeply. So from, I think, a simple reading, or your first reading, of the Gemara and Yom on Daf Nun Gimel and our Daf Yomi style reading, you would think, of course, that applies all year long, because the Gemara there notes that the Braisa seems to bring two psukim for the Chiyuv of Mala Ashan. Ki ba'anan era lakapor and melamit shenotim ba'mala ashan, uminayin shenotim ba'mala ashan, shenamar v'chisa anan haktor ed akaporet. We have two different psukim, both ki ba'anan and v'chisa anan haktoret, to teach you that there should be a cloud produced by the Mala Ashan. Kra l'kra, the Gemara is bothered, why should there be two different psukim? And Rav Sheshet there answers, chad le yom hakipure. Oh, sorry, yeah. Get it exactly right. Ainli ala b'yom hakipurim, b'shar yomot ha'shana minayin, tamad omer v'chisa. So you start by Yom Kippur, and then you expand it to the rest of the year, and it seems to be a davar pashat that you should include it. And in fact, you go back to the brayse at the beginning, and it explicitly says, if you miss Mala Ashan, there is a chiyuv mitzah for offering this ketoret. The parallel breita in Masechta Kriyot does not mention Mala Ashan explicitly. It just says if you're missing one of the simanim, your chayiv mitzah does not flag Mala Ashan specifically. And the Rambam in Avodah Yom Kippurim and in Klei HaMikdash paskins both of these braises, basically. So in Avodah Yom Kippurim, he says, if you're missing Mala Ashan, or if you're missing one of the Simanim, you're Chayav Mita, and he omits the Mala Ashan in Klei HaMikdash Perek Bet Halacha Chet, though he does paskin Halacha Gimel that you are supposed to add Mala Ashan to the Torah. So it's not like he's totally omitting Mala Ashan from the recipe, which also appear in that braise in Masechta Krisos, but he does omit it from the Chiyuv Mita, which is an interesting difference. So, you want to call this a sira, you can call it a sira. It might be one of those siras that the answer seems more intuitive already from the get-go. You don't need to think of it as a sira in the first place. But many of the commentaries did see it as a sira. Some tried to resolve it by saying the Rambam in Klei HaMikdash is relying on the Rambam in Avodah Yom Kippurim. And really, it's already kind of being included in, there's faces being made right now. People listening on the recording can't see this, but there are faces being made. This is a bad read. It's a read of the Radvaz, and the Radvaz is a smart Jew. He's entitled to his reading as well. And you might argue there that maybe he's poskening the version in Yoma against the version in Tresus, and okay, you can go that direction as well, and then there's no difference at all vis-a-vis the Mala Ashan between Yom Kippur and Shayim Arashana. Then you have this long Mishnah Lamalach. Other commentaries, he quotes, the Beis Yosef, for example, as well, that really argue that Mala Ashan might only be applicable to Yom Kippur and not during the rest of the year. This was also the view of Rabbeinu Menachem, quoted in the Tosfos Yeshanim on Gimel Amud Aleph as well. This view seems problematic. Tosfos Yeshanim really goes to town on it. It seems to contradict the explicit Gemara. It appears here. Tosfos also says multiple days in the Gemara there. All seem to assume that there's a Chiv on Shari Mor Hashanah as well, from Al Ashan. But you have that view noted there. The Mishnah Melech tries to defend it. He says, at the end of the day, there are maybe five or six resolutions of the Stira Kra Lakra mentioned in the Gemara. Does it teach you that you need either the Ikar or the Alam Al Ashan, or vice versa? Or maybe it comes to include an azhara and an onesh, or maybe it's chad le-mitzvah, chad le-akiv. There are so many different options, and we don't need a paskin like the one that extends the chiyuv mita all the way to Shari Mor Hashanah and just leave it on Yom Kippur exactly. This is sort of his approach in dealing with that issue. He quotes this great raya from the Gemara on Lamed Chet, where the Alexandrian scientists tried to make a replacement ketoret, right? When the makers, the Beit Avtinas, fled, and they decided they were no longer going to make the ketores because they weren't getting paid enough. So these other scientists were brought in to try to replicate the process, and they made a ketores that they offered, and the smoke kind of sputtered everywhere and didn't really have the beautiful, you know, rising and then spreading effect that the Mala Ashan really produced. And he sort of says, how could that be? When would they have offered this ketores? Couldn't be a test run, which you wonder why it couldn't have been a test run, but he assumes it couldn't have been a test run. It must have been the real shebang, and they tried doing it. So must be that they were able to get away with not using the Mala Ashan b'Shayim Mor Hashanah. Presumably they were not testing this high-stakes issue on Yom Kippur. I'd like to think they would have been willing to put up the money for that one day's worth of Torah. You also have a view, I think it was the Shar Ephraim maybe, that really any kind of Mala Ashan would be sufficient, but there's a special kind of plant called the Mala Ashan with a capital Mem instead of a lowercase Mem. It's not smoke-raising herb, it's the smoke-raising herb, and that might be a particular emphasis that the Beit Avtinas knew, and everyone else was able to replace it. Then you would really think some kind of Mala Ashan might be Akiv, even if not the specific plant as well. There may be other ways of dealing with that raya also, like saying they tested it on a dry run or with a different kind of mixture of spices. Hard to imagine that if you omit cinnamon and then burn a bunch of spices, it wouldn't have the same smoky effect. There's not that much cinnamon in the whole mixture. So, could be as well. This is, put this in brackets because this is a tefillah topic, but obviously this comes up in Orach Chaim Kuflam Bet Kuflam Gimel with the reciting the Pitum HaKtoret every day. The Minag Maribuv quotes it, and the Ramah brings it down, is really to try to minimize saying the Pitum HaKtoret, saying it only on Shabbos, even reading it out of a book, because if you get it wrong, there might be a Chiyav Mita involved. Is that if you're Chisar Achad Mikol HaSam Manim, there's a Chiyav Mita, and when you read Korbanot, it's like offering Korbanot, so you might say, and that should be a problem. We should be very careful about reciting Pitum HaKtoret. The Beit Yosef says, Im Kabbalah Hine Kabel, but I don't like it for a few reasons. Maybe reading it isn't really the same as offering it, which makes a great deal of sense. And regardless, per Beit Yosef's own theory, that a lot of the extra additives are only extras, and they're, mitzvah min mahadrin, but it's not the ikar chiyuv, it's not even usher to omit them. So all you need to do is say the 11 spices properly. And it's not so difficult to say the 11 spices properly on a daily basis, so maybe you should expand it to a more daily practice. We don't have any Nusach Sardar representation in the room anymore, but Pitum HaKtoret, Nusach Ashkenaz is not included every day. Does Nusach Sardar include it every day? They do? Right, same Korbanos, right. So it's hard to know what the minag is, because it's hard to know what Korbanos people are saying or not saying. I'd be surprised if many were saying it, but I'd be curious. So that's a Hilchos Tefillah topic when we come back to it in a couple of years. Okay. There's a third theory that comes up in dealing with this dealing with this Rambam. So not to say that really the Rambam in Avodah Yom Kippurim is the Iker and Klei Mikdash is just relying on it in some sense. And not to say that there's a clear differentiation and that if you skip Malashin during the year, it's really not a big deal. Maybe it's not even an Isser according to the Beis Yosef. But Yom Kippur is Makiv. That's the idea of the Rav, which appears in the Shurim, it appears in the Harari Kedem as well. There are really two dinim. There's the din of Mala Ashan as part of the definition of the Ktoras, as part of the Cheft of the Ktoras, which is necessary all year long, and on Yom Kippur. It's the same mixture of herbs and spices, both during the year and on Yom Kippur. And then on Yom Kippur, there's a separate din, Me'alu Me'ever. So when the Rambam says you're missing one of the Samamanim, he's including not only the 11 essential herbs, but even the extras that he had mentioned in those halachot in the beginning of Perek Bet of Klei Mikdash. And when on Yom Kippur, he says, if you're missing Mala Ashan, he's talking about a special kiyum on Yom Kippur of Mala Ashan, which exists, of course, to create the cloud, which has such prominence on Yom Kippur. And one consequence of this is very important, is that for the Rav, if you had the right mixture, but you somehow inhibited the smoke by some other means, you would not have fulfilled the din of Mala Ashan. You would have been B'chasar Mala Ashan, and you'd have Chiyum Misa as a result, because it's a separate kiyum of actually creating the smoke, and not just having the ingredient that could create the smoke. And it's really a bit puzzling. You say Mala Ashan Kol Shehu. It's like very difficult to imagine a Kol Shehu in the entire mixture is going to be enough to change the smoke-creating properties for the entire year. So it's already a very interesting just phenomenon there. Must mean know the spice has certain properties. I mean, we only include a Kol Shehu of Mala Ashan during the year. So Mitzad, the Torahs of all year, including Mala Ashan in the mixture, so you'd say a Kol Shehu is enough to be included in the mixture. It's not so obvious to me that including Mala Ashan, a Kol Shehu of Mala Ashan would be enough to create smoke that works perfectly for the entire year's worth of Ketores. It's a Haran Metzias. I mean, I'm sure some of the Achronim try to figure out how a Kol Shehu of Mala Ashan works. Right. It could be that the spice is much more potent than we know. There also seems to be a spice that grows around Eretz Yisrael, right? They're wandering the field and then they stumble across Mala Ashan. It's not like a secret thing only being grown in secret laboratories.
Is Mala Ashan one of the initial things made when you make all 368? Or is it added every day?
That's a good question. I don't know. Do we know? When the Rambam describes it, he does not describe it as being added each day as part of the Haktara. He describes it as something that is... that's part of the mixture. Though it might be machloka tosu and tosu yishana. We'll get to that in just a second. One ha'ara about the fact that one ha'ara on this view of the Rav, namely that the Yom Kippur, that the Ketores of every day needs to have some Mala Ashan in it, but doesn't necessarily need the kiyum of Mala Ashan of actually creating a smoke-raising cloud. So Rav Ike Sultan in the Kol Tzvi volume on Yoma quotes at the very end of ha'ara from Rav Rosenzweig, picking up on that lashon of Achad Bashana at the end of Parsha Tetzaveh, that perhaps part of the definition of the Ktoras all year is that it should be Ktoras that has a relationship or could be used hypothetically for Yom Kippur. Now, the Achad Bashana reference in that pasuk is Achad Bashana about the kapara on the Mizbeach HaZahav, but the Mizbeach HaZahav's relationship to Ktorah is very clear, and the way he made that claim is that perhaps we should think of the Ktoras of all year and the Ktoras of Yom Kippur as really being much more closely related then maybe this would initially sound. Meaning you need the Mala Ashan, because Mala Ashan on Yom Kippur is essential, it needs to be all year, even if I don't really need it, because it needs to be something that could be fit for Yom Kippur. I thought it was a very very nice hara. Okay, so I guess on your point, or Baron, about the whether the Mala Ashan is really part of the mixture or something that is added every day. So I can't speak to that factual question, did they add it every day or not? But it perhaps is a machlokes Tosfot and Tosfot Yeshanim in our Gemara about how we think about the Mala Ashan. Because Tosfot and Tosfot Yeshanim here debate whether... they're both bothered by the question of why you need a pasuk to teach that Mala Ashan should be ma'akev when chukah applies. And if chukah applies, then everything that's being done at the Kodesh HaKadoshim should certainly be ma'akev. And you shouldn't have a need for an extra limud here. So Tosfot says, Eina chinami, you're right, it's really to teach you that it's ma'akev the rest of the year. So Tosfot Yeshanim says, no, you need chukah because the Mala Ashan is part of what you do before. You do it before Yom Kippur. It's part of the preparation of the mixture of the Ketores. Chukah doesn't apply to the preparation you do in Erev Yom Kippur. And on the day of, it would be when chukah applies, and that's why you need the extra pasuk to tell you how to prepare the Ketores the day before. So you might argue That exactly kind of gets to that question. You know, for Tosfos, Mala Ashran is part of the Haktara, it's part of how it's offered, and so it's really defined primarily as what you're doing in the room. You are being Mala Ashran with Mala Ashran, and you're being Mechaseh on the Kaporos. Whereas Tosfos Yeshanim would say, no, it's part of the mixture. You made the mixture. The thing called the Ktoros of Yom Kippur is sitting over there. That's the Chafza. And now you're just bringing it in and offering it. But it's not per se defined as part of the Haktara. You might make an argument along those lines. One final ha'ar about Mala Asher before we move on to some of the, I guess you call it bigger picture points about the role of the Ktoros on Yom Kippur, is that you, to the extent you want to try to divide Mala Asher into two different molds or models, let's say, like the Rav was trying to do, to the extent you want to try to do that, you might be able to do it a little bit differently based on the Gemara's bifurcation between the Ala Mala Asher and the Iker Mala Asher. I think my first reading of the Gemara, and I think Rashi sounded like this as well, is that what the Gemara is trying to do is prove that both parts of the plant work. There's an Ala and there's an Iker, and how do you know that the Ala is good for making smoke? You know, that maybe that's the default. I need another process to tell me even the Iker is good enough at making smoke that I'm allowed to use it. But you do get the impression from others, I think Rabbeinu Hananel sounded like this, for example, that they actually might be doing different things in how they shape the smoke of the Ktoros. And maybe the Iker Mala Asher makes the smoke rise, and the Ala is what makes it serve as a proper kisui or cover on the Mizbeach. So you could say that for different roles of either the Mala Asher locally, or more broadly, the offering of the Ktoros on Yom Kippur, maybe are reflected in these two different parts of the Mala Asher. And if you want to say, again, either here or more broadly, there are multiple themes, we might be able to invoke Iker and Ala to that effect, according to those Rishonim at least. Okay, so that I think, probably called it five or six differences between the Ktoros of the daily offering and the Ktoros that's offered specifically on Yom Kippur. Now what we'll do is we'll step out to talk about some of the, I don't want to call them ideas in the sense of Tamei Mitzvah, some of the values or the kiyumim in the Ktoros on Yom Kippur, and I think you have evidence for three different themes. The first theme you have evidence for is the theme of Kapara. So you have the Gemara on Yom HaDafnembet, on Memdalid rather, that the Ktoros is an avoda, which is a mechaber for everyone. The pasuk says, V'chiber ba'ado v'ad beito v'ad kol kahal Yisrael. Is that the pasuk? Pasuk Yud Zayin. V'ad kol kahal Yisrael. And what kind of Avodah is mechaber for everyone. That's the Ktoros. I think the Gemara is a bit incredulous. You know, is the Ktoros really mechaber? It says yes. We know that mechaber is used in the context of Korach and the Machlo they use there. And the Gemara there says that the Ktoros is mechaber for lashon hara. It's davar shebechashai. It's something that's hidden, something that's private. And so too, it is mechaper on something that is private. That would be lashon hara. Now, it's worth noting that the parallel sugyas in Zvachim and Arachin that invoke this have commentaries, Rashi and Rabbeinu Gershom in Rashi and Zvachim, Rabbeinu Gershom and Arachin, when they say, oh, what's Devar Shebechashai? They say, oh, it's private, and they sort of strangely emphasize that because no one is in the Heichal or in the Bein Ulam Mizbeach. It's an interesting detail for them to emphasize, and that leads, you know, potentially to the idea that maybe we're not talking about the Ktoret of Yom Kippur at all, and that's really the everyday Ktoret, which, if that were the case, then, you know, combine that with the Grizz's theory that it's not really a Kiyum or a Kapara at all would be very difficult. It's just a Maisa Haktara, but a Maisa Haktara is a Mechaber. It's a little bit interesting, but it's a Mechaber for everyone universally, so maybe there's a way to reconcile those kinds of issues. But you have many also say this is referring to Yom Kippur in particular. Maharal and Shabbat Shuvah Drasha says this. Meshech Chachma comes down like this, explicitly connecting this to Yom Kippur. And obviously the pasuk of the Chibur Va'ado Va'ad Beito Va'ad Kol Kal Yisrael is in Parshat Achrimot. And of course, it makes sense that in that context, we would be talking about Yom Kippur. Now, if it's a machaper, so I feel like I could just, rewind my notes and find everything we said about all the issues in the kapara of the Ola question and bring them over here. It feels like this is, if it's a machaper, it's not exactly a typical machaper. There's no vidui associated with this machaper. The tshuva element that you might expect in kapara, again, if it's only a maisa haktara, it doesn't really have a connection to the bialim, maybe that would be an issue as well. The Gemara itself is a little bit surprised. The Gemara says, is it really kapara by Ktoros? It's not your default assumption in thinking about the offering of the Ktoros. So, purposes of maybe a kapara mikufya, some kind of ancillary or derech agav kind of kapara, and then we have to find the meaning or the significance of the Ktoros in some other area. And the kapara really is something that might appear derech agav. It's worth noting the Rav in the Shiurim on Daf Samach Aleph, I think, quotes his father, to say that it's mechaper as part of the broader avoda yom kippurim, meaning the avoda yom kippurim as a whole, besides each individual avoda being mechaper for everything that it does, the par for this and the sayer for that and the other sayer for the others. There's also a broad kapara that you achieve through the entire process of the avoda yom kippurim, and that the ktoras might have a role in that kind of kapara. He knows from that Gemara on Daf Memdalet, he invokes that as part of his evidence for the kapara there. It's worth noting also, and you know, put this where you will. The Minchas Avraham comes down on Yoma and Memdalet. He talks about the kapara and he says that perhaps we should actually limit the Grach's idea of the kapara of the Ketores being just a Maisa Haktara without a Kiyum to the rest of the year. But actually, on Yom Kippur, there might really be a sense of L'shem Bailim and a sense of Ritzui and a sense of Kapara associated with it. And then you would be taking this Gemara Memdalet and raising its prominence very dramatically and really saying the Kapara is a significant part of what's happening in the Ketoret. And then you'd have to explain why Kapara and why specifically Kapara for Lashon Hara is such a big deal. And B'Torah Drush, I'm sure the Maharal has many nice things to say about this, and Ayin Sham next Shabbat Shuvah, when you want to give a drush on this topic. Yeah. Right, it perfectly fits, right? Why would you limit it to, oh, because no one's in the Heichal when you're offering the Ketores and the Mizbeach? You're going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's incredibly private. And the privacy would definitely be played up in a reading like that. I definitely agree. The question, I think, more relates to Lashon Hara, meaning why of all things that when you're going into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and you're in a private, intimate space with God, you're getting Kapara for Lashon Hara. Of all, so either Lashon Hara has to be a really big sin that you need special kinds of kapara for. I think Maharal notes that there are other gemaras that sound like you can't get kapara for Lashon Hara, so maybe you need to bifurcate or you know, sidestep the normal channels of kapara and kind of cheat by going to the principal's office and saying, I really need kapara for this, I can't go my normal route. So maybe you'd say something along those lines. Again, Ayin Sham for more info. Okay. So that's one theme, the theme of kapara that is manifest in the and the Ketoret. The second theme is this theme of kisui, and we'll start with the most extreme manifestation of this is the view of the tzedukim in the Braisa here, and the Tosefta, and the Yerushalmi, that it really seems like the role of the Ketoret for them is to create a cloud that will protect you as you walk into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. You have to set up the Ketoret on the fire pan first, and then you walk into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, maybe into Bein Abadim, but you're doing that holding a big cloud in front of you so that you can't really see what's going on. I think this is what Philo is describing also, but I maybe will push back on me on this. He's describing the structure of the temple, the Beit HaMikdash, but he's not using that language. I'm also using an English translation of the Greek, and we think Philo maybe didn't know Hebrew, so there's a lot of translation going on. But we'll see if we make a diak here. He says, when the high priest goes... from the beginning of the passage, in the center was the temple itself, beautiful beyond all possible description, as one may conjecture from what is now seen around on the outside. I mean, the outside's beautiful. You can imagine this is an incredibly beautiful internal complex. For what is innermost is invisible to every human creature except the high priest alone, and even he is enjoined only to enter that holy place once in each year. Everything then is invisible. That's the emphasis. The idea is that everything is invisible when you are there. For he carries in a brazier full of coals and frankincense, and then when a great smoke proceeds from it, as is natural, and when everything all around is enveloped in it, then the sight of men is clouded and checked and prevented from penetrating in, being wholly unable to pierce the cloud. Now, the only, this is a diok in an English translation of a Greek translation of someone who maybe was never there and never heard a first-hand account of what was happening in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But he does say, you bring in the brazier full of coals and frankincense, and then when a great smoke appears. So does that mean that you bring it in, but you only put it on the coals once you're inside? Is he really being medayik in the and then? It's a little bit unclear. But the motif of covering is certainly reflected both in the Tzduki reading and in his description of what's happening. You're protecting yourself as you walk in. The Prushim do not think this. And it's very clear they do not think this because you're able to walk in through the Kodesh HaKadoshim up to Bein HaBadim before there's a cloud. So whatever's happening there is not going to automatically strike you down if you aren't carrying the proper shield. Nonetheless, a lot of the Pshat commentaries do emphasize this theme also of protection. You're going in, you're seeing the Anan. Ki ba'anan era ala kaporet. Hashem is present on the kaporet. Therefore, you need your Anan to cover that presence of Hashem. The Chizkuni comes down like this. The Rashbam comes down like this. The Netziv, who even accepts the idea of kapara, also says it like this. He says, when you first come in with the ketoret, it's just a protection, and only after you do the hazot, then you also get kapara from the ketoret. So he buys this gemara and Abdallah, but he still thinks that the cloud serves a kind of protective function. So it's not clear in this context whether we're able to preserve this theme in halacha. In Parshanut, it's a very nice idea. And certainly Ketoret seems to be used in different places in Chumash with this idea of protection. Again, Korach is one kind of example. And I think I was reading something about this during COVID also, about how recitation of the Ketoret is associated with protection from illness, protection from agefa, based on those kinds of parshiot. So you have this idea of Ketoret as a kind of protective avoda. But lehalacha, and specifically for the Ketoret on Yom Kippur, might be a little bit harder to say that, because that's not how we describe the process there.
When you go back in with the blood, is the smoke still going to be covering everything? Or within smoke?
It's probably not a great amount of ventilation. I imagine it takes a while for the smoke to clear out. Then again, you're going to come back who knows how much longer afterwards to pick up the kafu machta. You have to wonder, right? That's part of our science experiment. You have to see how long smoke would last in a room like that. Was there ventilation in the Kodesh HaKodesh? No reason to think so.
Well, just curtains. Under the curtain.
Yeah, there are two thick curtains, and you're waiting until the room is momish full of smoke, and you're bringing herbs in that are specifically designed to make a ton of smoke. Doesn't seem like ventilation. Right, I would think the smoke would last a while. I mean, it obviously isn't going to last year to year, and you're going to get there the next year, you'll have to do it again. But I imagine it would take a while for it to properly leak out. Get through the heichal. It's an interesting question. All right, so the third area, and this is where, this is probably where most of us naturally lie in looking at the sugya, at least from what we've seen, is that the ketoret serves some kind of role in encountering the Shekhinah in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Now, exactly what that role is, we'll have to unpack a little bit, but seems to be, broadly speaking, its function. We also add in brackets, we're not going to talk about it now. It might be subject for another chabura. We noted that during Seder today, that there's a lot more to say here. Talking about using this Torah illicitly is a whole valuable conversation. It gets into those issues in the Rambam and the end of Parakeh and the Grama Agrid, but we'll have to bracket a little bit of that. But just to note that, whatever value it is adding in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's very inappropriate to try to do that outside of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So with these two factors, the being in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and this special kind of avoda, so it might be natural, and we'll see if we can do that in a little bit, see whether, the idea is this avoda of the Torah is a very special avoda, and you need a special place in order to do that, or whether the space is a very special place, and you need a special avoda in order to be a matir to let you into that place. And those are my two ways of thinking about that. I mean, I really want to be able to offer the Ketoret, but I can't just walk around offering Ketoret and invoking the presence of the divine wherever I want. I can only do that in very sacrosanct locations, like the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Or, you'll flip it, and this would be certainly a theme the Rav emphasizes in many places, really, you want to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and be in that place, and there are certain avodot you need to do properly in order to get you into that room. But really, the goal is being in that room, standing there, shahia, leaving, all of those values that the Rav invoked. We'll get to those in just a second. So the symbolism, obviously, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu as an Anan or in an Anan is prevalent here, and then more prevalent as you go elsewhere in Tanakh. Kiba Anan Eireh HaKapur, it already sounds like an Anan is reflective of the Shekhinah, and that's Rashi's first reading. We saw Rashi's second earlier in the Chabura. The Psukim in Yeshayahu seem to describe revelation of God associated with smoke filling a room, and the phrase of Nidbali Kol Abayit Kulo Ashan, or Abayit Yimale Ashan, is invoked from those Psukim in Yeshayahu, and that also seems to reflect a certain revelation of God. Rashi on those Psukim assumes that we're talking about when Uzziyahu went into the Heichal to offer the Ketoret, so then actually it does not have much to do with Avodah Yom Kippurim per se. It seems like he was in the Heichal, as it's described in Divrei HaYamim. And the Tosfot HaRashi in our Gemara thinks that this is just like a Dimyon Ba'alma. We're not really talking about the Ketoret or Avodah Yom Kippurim at all. He says it's the Srafim, that's all that's going on in Yeshayahu, and it's not about Hashem's presence. But the language, al pi pshuto, sounds like that we're invoking here in our Mishnah, seems to connect us with these broader set of visions of Hashem. Similarly, the Midrash Tanhuma and Parshat Tzaveh says that Hashem came down on Yom HaShmini when the Torah was offered specifically. That would be interesting, because if we're trying to argue the Torah every day, or even the Torah they might have offered on Yom HaShmini is not necessarily the same as that would be offered on Yom Kippur. So that's not going to be as easy to say. But we have, I think, a little bit of reason already to say that maybe Yom Kippurim and Yom HaShmini of the Miluim have a connection. So we saw at the very beginning of the Limud the question of Prishat Kohen Gadol being learned from the Shiva Yimei HaMiluim. The Ramban in the beginning of Shmini says that the Korbanot of the Miluim are the same Korbanot as Yom Kippur. If you track Korban to Korban, he draws correspondences, and he says they're both come to be Mechaper Fachede Egel. So if you draw on those themes, then whatever we learn from Yom HaShmini, we could apply also to the Torah of Yom Kippur, and that might also be about bringing Hashem into the room, as the Midrash describes. The Mishnah Melech also linked the Miluim? Excellent. Yeah, so that would be okay, perfect. So right, that's an excellent makor for this kind of theme. And there are different ways, just to be clear, there are different ways of describing this role of the Torah as somehow, you know, reflecting Gilui Shechina in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? So one is to say that the smoke is sort of symbolic of that Gilui Shechina. You know, you create smoke because when Hashem appears, he appears in an anan, and we're trying to replicate that. Another is like the Sforno and Pasuk Yud Bet of Vayikra Tetzayin. V'lakach mo'a machtin on that Pasuk, ki teka shenishchat chatat v'hidvada v'sar avono, you finished your vidui, you finished the shechit of the chatat. Nasa muchan le'or b'or p'nei hamelech. You are ready to encounter the king in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. V'hine hamelech yir lecho muchan le'oro. And it's almost the opposite emphasis. The melech is able to be seen. Hamelech yira lecho muchan le'oro. Anyone who's ready to see him can see him. It's not, he's not limiting the experience of seeing the melech and how difficult it is and how daunting it is. The king's ready for everyone. Amro kiba anan era'eh. But ra'ui lechabdo b'ktoret kemo ha'inyan achar t'minim. It's fitting that when you go to see the king, you bring him a nice gift. The Torah is a very nice, pleasant gift. That really downplays the anan specifically. The Torah serves a role of getting you in the room, and the anan would be significantly downplayed according to that read. And maybe he would invoke it in turn as either part of the protection, meaning you're going to see the king, but you're being protected from the king, and there's this kind of push and pull energy. We have this idea from the Rav, and thinking about the role of the of this avoda, specifically about being in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. We've already seen this invoked, so we won't lay out all of the proofs in detail, but we saw the Rav emphasizes that the bia, the entering, and the yitzia, leaving the Kodesh HaKadoshim, are really defined as avodot. Similarly, even standing there while the house fills with smoke, while the Kodesh HaKadoshim and fills and the room is fully, you know, encompassed, also makes it sound like the emphasis is really on being in that room. And the Ketores is your way to get in the room. You do the Ketores properly, you're allowed to be in. It is a classic textbook matir. So in that sense, it's, you know, in some way protecting you from the consequences of going in the room illicitly. It's not a protection in the way that Sukkim describe, but it does have that that emphasis. In the Siddur Avoda of the Ritz Geis, this was a poetic one, so it's hard to know exactly what he means. But when he says, Pelat sa'ado lifnai lifnim lifnai la'aktir ulmala'ut ashan beit mo'ado. So, I'm not sure if you could take that last phrase as saying that the emphasis is on filling the house, that the avoda is really about getting the house to be full of smoke. He definitely does not talk about standing or staying there. He says you go in for this purpose, and then immediately talks about how you actually leave the way you came. So, I'm not sure that there's a huge emphasis there, but it's a nice formulation. If you take the Grizz, who pushes back on the Rav's analysis there of why you wait in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so it's not about waiting, you know, for its own sake as part of the Seder HaAvoda, just waiting till you're finished with the Avoda, the same way you wait until you're finished with the Sira Mishtaleach before you can move on to the Kriyat HaTorah. So you also wait until the Torah is burnt before you are able to leave. And then that would sort of flip the weight here, right? It's not the Torah is matir to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's that, you know, you go to the Kodesh HaKadoshim in order to be able to do the Torah properly. And once it's done being done properly, you leave because that's what you were there for. That was the specific avoda you were trying to be engaged with. I think I'll leave that. We started this limud. We looked at Aspaklari. We saw there are a lot of passages in the Zohar. Rav Stav in his piece in Mibela Parocha plays those up a lot. So he has his first piece where he goes through maybe more standard reading of the sugya, and then in the second piece he basically quotes a lot of passages in the Zohar to talk about one further idea in thinking about emphasis of this avoda. He says it's not, you know, hastara, the idea we're covering up Hashem's presence while we're walking into the room, nor is it gilui, the cloud itself does not reflect Hashem's presence. Rather, when we see descriptions of revelation or communion with Hashem in the Torah, they're often done be'anan. So Moshe goes up to Har Sinai, and an anan comes down, and Hashem meets Moshe in that place, be'anan. So the anan isn't Hashem, the anan is the context for the avoda. And what he picks up on, and I'm not even going to pretend to work on the Kabbalistic piece, but even just on the symbolism of the smoke filling the room and going up and then across the ceiling and then down the walls, and it envelops you. So if you take that symbolism seriously, and the idea of really being enveloped, not only covering on top of the parochet, but surrounding you, so it becomes a context for the experience of the divine, right? It's not protecting you from God, it's not revealing God, it's situating you so that whatever's happening on the kapores is something that you're able to engage with as well. But in Kamakam Laharech, it's a nice piece. If you certainly Alderach Rosh and Alderach Sod as well, certainly would be enjoyable. Okay, that is it. We ended 3 minutes early. So maybe I did have time for the second half of the Chabura. In Kamakam Laharech.